Right, welcome back to Spoiler Country. Welcome back from last episode. On tonight's show, as always, we've got Kenrick Regan and me, Johnny Horsley. Spoiler Country is a podcast where we talk about comics, movies, you know, whatever kind of hits our fancy. Mostly comics, though, because we kind of tend to always fall back to the comic books because that's what we love and that's what we do with. Tonight's show, we are going to talk about DC Comics and why we think they are the best publisher out there and what we love about them. We'll talk about some things that we don't love about them as well, but mostly keep it positive because DC Comics has some great stuff out there.
This is not the only thing. This is the beginning of a series of shows that we're going to do where we're highlighting specific publishers. Today is, right. is DC and why we love DC and what makes DC the best. The next one will probably be Marvel and why Marvel's the best. And then Image and then Dark Horse and then, you know, and kind of keep that theme going because each publisher has a unique way of doing these stories and how they present superheroes or non-superheroes, comedy, or drama, or horror, or supernatural, or any of those different types of genres that are out there. Each one does it differently, and each one have different offshoots. Like DC has Vertigo for adult, and Marvel has Max, and an Icon, and Image has Skybound, and so there's all these different offshoots of each publisher. But each publisher does things a little differently. So tonight we're going to concentrate on DC.
Exactly. Yeah, and as you may know, listening to the show for the last, I think 12, 13 episodes we've done. I'm a huge DC fanboy. I love DC. I've loved DC since I was a kid. I've read them. I've watched the movies. I've watched the TV shows, the cartoons. So I probably have a lot more to say on this topic tonight than Kenrick does, but I'm sure he has some to chime into.
Well, you know, it's funny. When I was growing up, it was all Marvel. You know, a lot of X-Men, a lot of Spider-Man, a ton of Spider-Man. Loved Wolverine. Loved that whole genre. I loved the whole mutant angle. I loved the fact that at a young age, I was seeing a parallel between, you know, what was going on in America race-wise and how they were showing the mutants and what they were going on with and how there was parallels in that. And so it was an interesting read, and that's what I did. I didn't read DC. I never really was a huge Superman fan. I always thought he was too Boy Scoutish for me. The same reason that I don't like Captain America, really. I just don't want to read somebody that's just because people aren't like that in real life, you know? And if they are, it's a rare person that you meet that way. And when I do meet people that way, they bug the hell out of me. So it just wasn't for me. So I stuck with Marvel. But over the last 3 or 4 years, let's see, 2014 is when I really started getting back into collecting and reading again, like I was a brand new person all over again, which was great. A lot of Batman. A lot of Justice League, a lot of Green Arrow, a lot of, I went back and I've been reading Sandman and I've been, you know, going that route. So a lot more DC in my adult life than in my younger life. And I think there's a reason for that.
I think so too. And I think that big reason is probably my first point of why I like DC is, and it's not, and this isn't a stab at any other publisher, because other publishers, you can also throw this under too, but DC has always told mature stories for the last 30, 40 years. They've told very, you know, looking back to DC, when Neil Adams took over Batman in the 70s, and they kind of started pushing forward with doing, you know, more adult-oriented stories, and they get into the 80s with The Killing Joke and with Watchmen and all the stuff that led up to that.
Could you say that Neil Adams brought in more of the dark, brooding Batman?
Oh, you can absolutely say it. Neil Adams is the one that brought Batman out of the campiness of the 60s into being the Dark Knight. He's 100% responsible for that. Him and Denny O'Neill, you know, and with Denny O'Neill did on Green Lantern to bring Green Lantern back to like a character that was a real character. They brought those characters to be realistic, you know, more, not realistic, but, you know, darker toned and less, you know, boppy, you know, oh, Joker's got a bomb, haha, shark repellent type of stuff, you know, it'd be more real story, more stories with sustenance in them.
So what was the catalyst for Frank Miller to take it even that next step?
So Frank Miller, I think he got that because Frank Miller has always been a fan of the Batman. You know, he, from what I understand, you know, he started with Marvel, and he started off, you know, with Daredevil pretty much. And he told some pretty dark tales on Daredevil. I've always, my personally thing, I know we're talking about other publishers, but, and I'll talk about this more in the Marvel episode, but Daredevil's always been the outlier comic for Marvel to me, because to me, Daredevil's always been its own separate thing that's been kind of in the Marvel universe, but I can go off for hours on that.
Do you think Daredevil would be a bigger attraction if he was in the DC universe?
I think Daredevil actually would fit better in the DC universe than he does in the Marvel universe, just based on the kind of character he is. And that's because he's more attuned to a Batman type character. He's a darker character as far as his background story, how he became Daredevil, his interaction with Bullseye and Elektra. that he very much reminds me as a Batman-esque character, but not quite. He's still his own character, but he has a lot of the qualities that would fit right well in the DC universe. And I think right. that if he was there, he would probably be a bigger character than he is. Now, he has the TV show now, and he's blown up a lot more.
Yeah. But, yeah. In 2014, you can get Daredevil number one for like $500-$600.
Not anymore.
Now you can't touch it for like $5,000 or something like that. It's ridiculous.
I think the cheapest one I saw at Emerald City for Daredevil one was like a graded 1.5 copy for like $1,000. I was like, no.
Yeah, that's crazy. So here's why I like DC so much. And really, it comes down to the history of comics. DC gave us, besides Billy the Kid and besides Buffalo Bill and all those Old West guys, DC gave us the first true American superhero, like the Greeks have with Hercules, right? You look at Superman, and even though I'm not a big Superman fan, I'm not a big Superman fan because of the way they portray him in his philosophies. But as a character and as somebody to read about and listen to these fanciful stories that they weave about Superman and in and out, it's amazing. You know what I mean? The degree and the backlog of how much has been written about Superman is more than any one person actually lives in a lifetime. Right. You know, and so it's an incredible, incredible thing. And that was our first real look of what how a superhero should be written, drawn, and communicated with in the genre of comic books. And it's an amazing thing. And that's all DC, you know.
Right.
And then you bring in the Batman on top of that, and then all the stuff they had going on in the late 30s and the 40s was stupendous. And I think it's fair to say is that DC paved the way and showed other companies like a Marvel or Timely, at that time, how to do it correctly.
Well, yeah, there's a reason why you saw copycat characters come out immediately after Superman. You had Captain Marvel come out from Fawcett Comics. You had a ton of copies come out. I mean, essentially, Captain America in a lot of ways is a copy of Superman. He has same color scheme, same Boy Scout attitude. You know, same. I mean, he's not an alien, but he's very much, you know, indestructible, save the world Boy Scout kind of character. You know, all these characters are copying of Superman. You know, there were some original ones too, but they all got to come out and be successful because of the road that Superman laid for them. Even if it wasn't for Superman and Batman and the Justice Society and Wonder Woman laying that foundation, say, hey, we can make a world out of these superheroes, and you can have these things that are for kids, apparently, or not for kids, and adults can love them, make money and be successful and make a franchise and make TV shows and make movies in the 40s at a time when that didn't seem like something would happen. It allows other companies to go, oh, National Comics is doing this. Let's go ahead and let's make our own characters to go into this. And you got a bunch of great characters out of that. Once the other companies stopped copying Superman and started making their own characters, you got a bunch of characters come out of the woodworks that were just building up and create that whole golden age of comics. That was
the Human Torch,
right? That was
Submariner.
Exactly. It wouldn't have happened had it not been for, you know, Schuster and Siegel making, you know, coming out with Superman for National Comics.
Yeah. So it was National Comics, and then DC, and then did National turn into DC, or did DC purchase National?
So it's a long, convoluted story of what happened there, but essentially it was National Comics.
Give us the short version.
Basically, it became DC Comics. They renamed themselves after their most popular comic, or their
kind of like Timely Atlas to Marvel.
Yeah, not the most popular. They renamed themselves after their first comic, which was Detective Comics, because that predates Action Comics by a couple years.
Right,
but there was
Batman's first appearance is in Detective Comics, but that's number 27, not number one.
Correct, and you can even read the biography of Bob Kane, who's the co-creator of Batman with Bill Finger. And he says that the only reason why he created Batman was because of the success of Superman. He goes, oh, guys in tights with capes are selling lots of copies. I can do that here. Let's hire a writer to make this a real thing. And that's how he got Bill Finger on board, and they created Batman together, and which became.
Didn't Bill Finger create the Joker as well?
Created the Joker as well. He created Bruce Wayne, the whole Batcave backstory of Batman. He created all of that. Right. Bob Kane's contribution was, hey, let's create a character called Batman, and it'll make him dress like a bat.
Right. Hey, but that's a catalyst, man. You can't take that away.
You can't. You can't take away Bob Kane's effect on the industry. Just like you shouldn't be able to deny Bill Finger his effect on the industry too.
Right. Same like with Stan Lee and Jack Kirby.
Exactly. Jack Kirby is.
You know, Jack Kirby didn't come up with the ideas. He didn't come up with the general idea. He came. You know, he might have come up with the costumes and the backstories and what their names were at some point. But it took Stan Lee to say, "I need a character that does this." And I want to do the thing that does this.
Yeah, there's been nobody in the industry, and there probably never will be another person in the industry who's had so much influence over the development of just the comic world and how things are done than Stan Lee and Jack Kirby.
Yeah.
And that's more for the for Marvel episode, but you know.
Well, the only ones that did is Schuster and Spiegel, right?
Well, no, all they did was create Superman and a couple other minor characters, but you look at Kirby. And
yeah, but that was the beginning of everything. I mean, you think back, if they didn't come up with that idea and that concept, who knows what other people would have came up with.
Well, yeah, because before Superman, comics were, there were comic books out, but they weren't selling as well as, you know, as soon as it actually came out, superhero comics sold big. And most comics,
they were weird science.
Yeah, well, and most of them were like
stories of horror, and
or they were recollections of Sunday comic strips published into a book.
Yeah, they're recollections. And well, you know, they did a lot of pulp stuff, like with
The Shadow,
H.P. Lovecraft, and Robert E. Howard stuff, and all those short magazines with short stories that would have pictures involved with it, and that was your initial creation of the comic, of the American comic book.
Well, they had the Phantom and they had the Shadow and stuff, but those weren't really superheroes. You know, those were pulp heroes. I mean, you could definitely argue
they're big on radio.
Yeah, you could argue that the Phantom and the Shadow are superheroes, but you can also argue very much against it. It really depends on how you want to look at it.
They're more superheroes now,
right?
After the inauguration of being indoctrinated into what a superhero is,
correct?
They weren't written to be that way.
No.
They started retconning their backstories to make them more that way.
Right, right. And I mean, even if you say yes, they were superheroes, and yes, they came before Superman. You know, even if you agree with that anecdote, which some people do, even then you can't deny the effect of what Superman had and what National Comics had when they launched that first comic, Action Comics number one. It literally changed the industry of comics and created a whole genre.
Yeah, DC also gave us Wonder Woman, who by any circumstance is probably the single most important character in women's contribution, even though it's not created by a girl. She was influenced by two women, but the point is the creation of her and having her own comic book and how they actually pushed her so much was a very big deal, especially at the time that they did that. That was forward thinking.
Yeah, I agree. Them pushing her that hard back in the 40s when, you know, there wasn't a lot of strong female characters in any genre. I mean, you had some, but you didn't have any of that caliber, and they pushed her narrative, and she became this force to be reckoned with, so much so that, you know, she has probably one of the best movies out this year. And I don't know if you noticed, but they're actually making another movie called Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman, about her creation, about Professor Marston and his wife and his mistress.
Yeah, that's out already, right?
No, it comes out in October.
Oh, I thought it was out already.
No, it's according to what I'm looking at right here, it says October 27th.
Oh, okay. Okay, you're probably right.
I mean, I saw it looks really good, and it's interesting. Think about characters and creators and stuff like that. But for that character to get a movie is one thing. That's one milestone, right? But for the creators of that character to get a movie about the creation of that character puts it on a whole new level, because then you're telling a story about the creation of a story, which is just cool to me. I mean, there hasn't been a lot of that. I mean, there's been a couple. I mean, you had the movie with, you know, Ben Affleck played George Reeves, who was the second actor to play Superman in the 50s, who had that long-running Adventures of Superman TV show, in the movie Hollywood Land, to tell the story of, you know, his life and death, basically, as his death all shrouded in mystery of how he died. And you have these, if you have a character that you can then tell a story about the creation or other people playing that character, it just brings it to a whole new level that hasn't really been hit in very many comic book characters, but yet DC has it happen multiple times. I wouldn't be surprised if in a couple of years we have a movie about the creation of Superman, or about the creation of the Justice League, or one of those, you know, other famous creations from the Golden Age. If we have more movies telling the stories about those creations, I mean, we have documentaries about Bill Finger and Bob Kane, but I wouldn't be surprised if in, say, a year or two after the Ben Affleck, Matt Reeves Bat movie comes out, if we don't have some suspense movie come out about how, you know, Bob Kane stole Batman from Bill Finger and that whole thing, and, you know, telling that whole story, I wouldn't be surprised if we get that too.
Yeah. Well, 78 years of Wonder Woman now.
It's a lot.
78 years. Yeah. And not only is she the most iconic female superhero in the world, but she's also like one of the most powerful superheroes in the DC universe.
Right.
You can't. The only person that can go head to head with her in the DC universe for a head to head fight. I mean, I'm sure there's more than I'm thinking of. I'm sure like Darkseid and all that kind of stuff. But is Superman. on the superhero level is right. probably Superman. Because she wouldn't, it wouldn't matter what Batman did, she'd knock the shit out of him. You know what I mean? At some point, she'll be able to catch the Flash. Maybe not in a not in speed wise, but she would be able to figure out where he's going to be at any given time, and she'd be there to do whatever needed to be done.
She'd outsmart
and
him.
She'd outsmart him because she's one of the more intelligent fighters. She's one of the more funner reads. Well, and I said she's, funner. She's right. one of the more fun reads in the DC universe because one, she makes mistakes. Two, she doesn't hesitate to take care of business. You know what I mean? Like, woe be you if you fuck over Wonder Woman or you fuck over Superman. Superman's not going to kill you. She'll decapitate your ass.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, and she's battle trained. I mean, she's battle trained from birth. You don't have much more. She's not only does she have God, you know, godlike power because she, depending on what origin you look at, she's a god.
She is a god. Yeah.
She's, you know, battle trained from birth. She's intelligent. She knows her way around. She's a diplomat, and not just to correct you, October will be 76 years for Wonder Woman, not 78.
No, October 1941, 76 years. You're right. It's a year younger than my mom. I'm thinking a year older than my mom, but you're right. 76.
Superman's at 78 years now, but
yeah,
he was 38. Anyways, I just don't want someone to comment and say, "Oh, you dumbasses, it was 76." You know, just get it out there now.
Whatever.
Not that we give a shit, but I just want to stop that from happening.
But the point is, DC Universe gave us this character who is iconic. Who was amazing. She had a TV show that my dad loved to watch.
Oh, it was great.
It was campy. I tried watching it. I loved it when I was a kid. I tried watching it not too long ago just to see. And I was like, oh, my God. I don't know what the heck I was watching. But, movie, I think that's the best DC movie to come out yet.
Oh,
it's so good. I mean, I was a huge fan of BBS. I know that's not politically correct. Well, geez, man, I've had so many arguments about that stupid movie over because I like it and people want to tell me why I shouldn't like it. And it's screw you. Cool. I like it. It's fun. Yeah, it's a freaking superhero movie. Get away. It's a superhero movie.
Right.
That's what it is. At the end of the day, it's a superhero movie and the special effects were amazing. And it's a comic book on the screen that looks amazing. So, yeah, I love it.
And that's cool.
Yeah, I'm not going to – actually, I'm not. I'm sorry, not sorry. I'm not going to apologize for liking a movie because other people want to tell me how stupid I am for liking it, which is the weirdest thing. I've never had an argument over a movie, over one movie so much in my life because I like it. And then I got to be made fun of for liking a movie. It's like, are you serious? You're going to make fun of me for liking a movie?
Right. Well, okay. I was doing something where it was with you last episode. I was defending that I kind of still like, you know, the Batman and Robin and Batman Forever movies for what they're worth, even though you hate them. I find enjoyment in watching Batman Forever because I did tell you,
hey, you have a nostalgia about it.
Right.
And if you like it, you should like it. You like it. But that wasn't for me. That wasn't my experience with it.
Exactly.
And that's fine, but I didn't make fun of you for liking it.
No, I know. I made fun of you for BVH just because I was being an asshole, but I really don't care.
But you know. I like Suicide Squad, and I really love The Dark Knight. I like all three of those Batmans. I think they're all great. But Wonder Woman was different. The only thing I didn't like on Wonder Woman was the whole thing that love can do whatever at the end. But other than that, it was just a fun movie to watch, and I saw it twice in the theater, and I can't wait for it to come out on video so I can watch it a bunch more times.
Right, that No Man's Land scene is by far one of the best action sequences in a comic book movie I've ever seen.
The beach scene at the beginning, in the first 10 minutes of the movie,
and that
No Man's Land made that movie. That's beach
so
scene,
great. Yeah,
when Robin Wright jumps off the shield and then turns back and is doing the three arrows. Oh my God, you're like, oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm going to need a moment of my own, you guys.
Right. And Robin Wright in that movie is so fantastic.
Oh, she's great. I wanted her to be in it more.
Well, she's in Justice League, so that's going to be good.
Oh, she's in Justice League?
I think there's flashbacks.
Flashbacks?
It has to be. Well, it has to, because I'm sure they're going to have like a mother box in Themyscira in the old times. And Robin Wright, it'll be Robin Wright and Hippolyta, whoever. I can't remember who played her, but
she was great too.
Yeah.
They did a great job on that whole Themyscira setup was amazing.
Well, you know, for those actors they hired for the Amazonians, they didn't go hire models and beach babes. They hired athletes for that.
Right.
They hired people who could do the shit they were doing. And I was like, oh, you want Amazons? Let's get people who are at the peak of perfection of athletics. And that's what you're going to have. they're not
a lot of gymnastics and everything. Yeah,
they're not all going to look the same. You've got the one girl who's a professional boxer, you know, and she's in there. They all look different and they all excel in what they do. And that's what you would have if you had a race of Amazon warriors. I mean, look at our military. They don't all look the same, you know?
Right. That director, man, she really took the reins and did it right.
Yeah. I'm anxious to see her next one. You know, the next one.
So DC gave us Wonder Woman, amazing. They gave us Superman, the really the first superhero in my mind. I mean, I'm sure somebody said, well, no, this person was first, but whatever. They gave us the first blockbuster superhero. Okay. They gave us Batman, who is by far probably the most popular superhero that's ever been created. I mean, I think, weren't you telling me that every single year, year in, year out, Batman books outsell everybody?
Pretty much. I mean, Batman's always in the top three, no matter what, every year, and has been for the last, you know, at least 30 years.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, I don't think even Wolverine's been like that.
No. I mean, you know, Batman's, he has constantly had multiple series going at once. Constantly.
Right.
There hasn't been a time in the last, you know, since the 90s that he's only had one series. He's had, I mean, actually forever, because he's always had Detective and Batman going. So he's always had two comics going with him as the title character since 1940. Right. And then he had, even in the 60s and 70s, he had Brave and the Bold, which he was the title character in off and on. And he had World's Finest for forever. And then he had, you know, Batman Shadow of the Bat, Batman Legends of the Dark Knight, and then all the other series he had, plus miniseries, plus stories here and there, and appearances.
You're getting excited.
Everywhere. I know.
But that's not what makes DC amazing. What makes DC amazing, though, is the characters that they've given to us. And then you get into the Justice Society, which you educated me on was really the first superhero team.
Right.
Right.
All-Star Comics number 3, I believe they appeared in 1941, which was, you know, Sandman, Dr. Fate, Wonder Woman, all those characters back then, which was the first superhero team to come in and do, you know, team type of stuff. They had, I mean, here's the thing of why DC is one of the best, or if not the best publisher that's ever been longevity wise. If you want to compare a superhero to somebody else, you compare them to Superman, Batman, or Wonder Woman, bar none.
Right.
You don't say, oh, he's just as good as Spider-Man, or he's like Spider-Man. No, it's like, okay, is he as good as Superman? Is he good as Batman? Is he as good as Wonder Woman? Those are your bar. You set the bar with those three characters. And I can't find it right now, but there's a great article, a great thing written by Alex Ross about superheroes. And he goes over I think it's 5 archetypes of superheroes. And he says, you can compare every superhero ever created to these 5 DC characters. If it wasn't for these 5 characters, nobody else would exist. And he goes through different types of I think it's Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Flash, and Green Lantern. I think those are the 5 he uses for him, because you have your mythological, you have your detective, you have your Amazon goddess woman, you have your science-based Flash, and you have your science fiction Green Lantern. And he writes this thing, he said, you can compare every superhero ever created will fall into one of these 5 categories that is based upon one of these classic DC Golden Age characters.
Right.
They did it first. Right.
That's hard.
And they did a great job at it. And it's hard to, sometimes being first is great, sometimes it's not. In this case, they were first, and they've been around for 75, 78, almost 80 years for a reason. They're still publishing comics 80 years later for a reason, you know?
Right.
Love them or hate them, you cannot deny their impact on the, not only just their genre, but on the world and on pop culture in general, you know?
Well, DC has, I mean, they have, just like everybody else, their eras of, like the 60s, everything was wacky in the 60s when it came to comic books.
But that wasn't their fault. That wasn't DC's fault.
That was like the comic code and the comic code authority.
Yeah, the comics code made them have, they had to change their stories. They couldn't do half the things they wanted to do, so they had to go that campy route.
Right. But what I'm, yeah, they did. But at the same time, when, well, it was Marvel that broke the code, right? With Spider-Man and I think it was LSD issue. But, and they, Stanley said, no, we're going to publish it. We're not going to go through, just do it. And then when they did that, Neil, there's a thing on Channel 9, PBS. That's what I'm trying to say. PBS did a 3-part episode about the evolution of comic books through the industry. I don't know if you had a chance to watch it. And if you haven't, you should.
I'm pretty sure I've seen that.
They talked about the fact that the Comics Code Authority changed everything, that all the publishers were doing a lot of, the superheroes fell out of favor. Okay. After the 40s, into the 50s, the superheroes fell out of favor. Everybody was leaning towards the UFO craze and aliens, and not aliens like in Superman, but aliens as in invaders from Mars and stuff like that. Well, it wasn't Invaders from Mars. It was Mars. No, yeah, it was. What was the Orson Welles?
War of the Worlds.
War of the Worlds, stuff like that. And then the horror comics and the zombies and supernatural stuff. A lot of horror comics were coming out that time. Tales of the Crypt, you know, Vault of Horror, all that kind of stuff. And then you had the senator. I can't remember the senator's name. And he started, you know, freaking out about the horror comics more specifically because of the amount of violence in them and the gore. And said, this is a danger to our kids, blah, blah, blah. You know, basically it was PMRC before the PMRC. And so he said, we need to change this. So the Comic Code Authority came out. And that was the comics industry to stop the burning, because they literally were burning comic books, right? Like book burning, because they felt that they should be raided and at least, you know, pulled from shelves because they were a danger to the kids' minds, right? Because they're going to read this stuff and they're going to go eat their parents' brains or something.
Craziness.
And so, yeah, it was crazy. And so so Marvel and DC, and specifically because those were the two, got together. And that's one thing I really do love, even though I think there's more hatred between Marvel and DC on the outside world from the fan base than there is on the actual two companies. Because they've done so many cross promotions and they've worked together so many times. It's actually really cool. And one of the things they did is they got together and said, let's create this third party called the Comics Code Authority. And we'll submit all our books through there. And then they created a set of rules and changes that they have to adhere to before they're allowed to have, and then they have the stamp, you know, the Comics Code Authority, and they did it. And it changed the way the books were written, and it changed the themes, and it's what created that wacky 60s era, and they couldn't say certain things, and they couldn't have needles, and they couldn't, like, it was very common to see a hypodermic needle in the 40s on the cover. Well, come the Comic Code Authority, you wouldn't see that anymore.
Well, the best example of the craziness of the Comics Code Authority was Marv Wolfman couldn't have his name on a comic book because his name said Wolfman.
Yeah, and it was weird.
That was considered not allowed.
Yeah, and that was a weird thing. They couldn't say vampire or the undead. They couldn't say the undead. That's why Morbius is the living vampire.
Right.
Because you couldn't be an undead vampire, which is it's bananas. It's completely bananas. So Spider-Man Marvel has an issue with Spider-Man where I think a kid is on LSD and he jumps off the building and dies. I think it's LSD. And of course, the Comics Code Authority would never let this out. But Stan Lee said, you know what, I felt pretty strongly in this. If this was we felt that this was an issue. There was a lot of stories coming out of kids doing some dumb things on drugs. And we thought we needed to have a voice in it and kind of basically pick a side. And so they released it without Comic Code Authority. And Neil Adams talks about it going, we can't believe they released that book without Comic Code Authority. Did they just do that? Well, then you get Green Lantern with Green Arrow. And you get Speedy with the hypodermic needle because of that. No Comic Code Authority. They broke it. And that was an amazing thing. And that's from two competing competitors playing off each other.
Right. Now, to give fair credit where fair credit is due, EC Comics was fighting the Code Authority way before DC Marvel ever did. EC was fighting on all their comics. I mean, back the Code
Authority. That's because EC Comics did all horror books.
Right. Right. And they did I don't know if you know this, but what they did to get around the reason. So the Comics Code Authority killed EC Comics. It really did. But the way that William Gaines was able to keep going with Mad Magazine was because he switched it from a comic book format to a magazine format, which the Comics Code Authority had no jurisdiction over.
Yeah, it was smart.
Yeah, but all those classic Tales from the Crypt books all fell to the wayside because they literally couldn't put their books out because of the Comics Code Authority.
Well, that is one thing. That is one argument. The other argument is too that because of that, I can't remember that senator's name. You should look that if you have your computer right there. Look, I can't remember his name. It's killing me. The other thing is that killed EC Comics is that guy made it very much aware of what the kids were reading, because most of the time parents back then would say, "Oh, you want to buy the."
You're talking about Frederick Wertham's and his book Seduction of the Innocent.
Yeah, that's him.
He had hearings on. He wrote. He was a psychologist who wrote the book Seduction of the Innocent, which called out.
Hearings. He wasn't a senator. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, he called out the gay relationship between Batman and Robin and the horror comics. Yeah. And how all that stuff was bad for kids, and That book is ridiculous. If you
remember what well, the thing is what he did, though, is you got to remember in the 50s, religion played a very big part. And I don't think I think a lot of parents didn't realize some of the books that their kids were reading.
No, they weren't at all. They had no idea.
So now it made them pay attention to that. What are you reading? And then all of a sudden they're seeing zombie after zombie and faces getting eaten off and everything. And I think EC Comics really stayed with that horror format. They didn't have a lot of differentiation in their stuff. They did Tales from the Crypt, right?
Tales from the Crypt. They did a bunch of horror stuff and Mad Magazine.
Mad Magazine, right? But mostly, their kitsch was horror. And I think things were changing. By the 60s, you know, Kennedy had been shot. The difference, the change in ideology, the change in America was happening. I think the superheroes were prone to come back at that point. And I'm not too sure that you can just blame the one thing of the Comics Code Authority killing EC Comics. I think that that whole genre was starting to run out of favor at that time.
Well, yeah, beyond a little bit. Just
it was a huge factor in it. Don't get me wrong, right? The Comics Code Authority was a big factor in it. But at the same time, I think that their days were numbered because they weren't changing they didn't want to change. They had a winning formula, but they didn't want to change. And the nice thing with DC is DC was able to say, things are changing, but you know what we got in our back pocket? We got Superman. We got Green Lantern. We got Green Arrow. We got Wonder Woman. We got Batman. Let's create the Justice League and go and just move forward.
Right. And, you know, even if you don't like the campiness of the 60s, you can't. I mean, if you want just to have a fun read of a book, just go pick up any DC book from the 60s. Like, go pick up an issue of Jimmy Olsen or a picture of Lois Lane, a copy of, or any of those books. And, I mean, it's going to be ridiculous. It's going to be incredibly stupid. But by the end of it, you know, it's going to be, oh, well, it's interesting. They're funny. They're campy and they're meant to be. And really, I mean, Neil Adams worked both on Jimmy Olsen and on Lois Lane back in the 60s. There's some amazing stuff in those books because you have these creators who would literally go on to redefine the genres working in these books in the 60s that were, I mean, by today's standards, ridiculous. I mean, nobody would buy a Superman's Pal Jimmy Olsen today, but back then it was selling more copies back then than the top book now sells each month. You know, you had 300,000 copies of Jimmy Olsen going out a month, where now the top book's at 140,000 or so a month, you know? So yeah, they were campy, but people ate them up back then.
140,000 a month, 140,000 total.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, so DC did a lot of things right. There's a lot of history there beyond what other people, I don't think people understand how much history is there for DC and how much of American icon that company really is.
Right.
But there's some things, there's some cracks in that door, you know.
Well, you can easily start by saying that part of the one of the problems of DC is the fact they have such a rich and large history. It's hard to keep comics going and stories going when you have 78 years of history to worry about, you know.
Yeah, it's okay to not have a character be written about for a long time. You know, you can't do that with a Batman. But look what they did with Sandman. Right. They commissioned Neil Gaiman to reinvigorate Sandman from the 40s. And what did he do? He said, I'm not going to do that character. And he gave us one of the greatest literary comic books ever created.
Yeah, probably the best 75 issues of a book you'll ever read that tells one giant story.
All Vertigo, all adult themed.
Yeah. And DC, DC in the 80s, you got to admit, they brought out books for adults. You know, they took comics. You still had the Batmans and the Supermans that were, you know, and stuff for kids and stuff for teenagers, but they upped the game by making that Vertigo line and saying, okay, we got these characters, Swamp Thing and Sandman and Preacher and Why the Last Man. They said, okay, these are adult stories told by adult writers about adult themes. And, you know, they have very heavy and very literary intricate.
Yeah. Constantine.
Yeah. Hellblazer. I mean, it's another great example.
Yeah. That's a crazy run. And that was a great run as well. And then they brought out Preacher in the 90s. Another amazing set. But here's the thing, Johnny, that I don't like about DC. I don't like the fact that all the cities are not real cities.
Yeah.
I don't like that some of their characters are so much of a god that there's no real flaw in their things. Like something like Superman is constantly just gaining new powers. Like all of a sudden he can do heat vision and he can do, you know, I know there's more than that. You know, there's always some way that he's invulnerable to something and it gets a little tiring. You know what I mean?
And that's, so I agree with you. Like I don't, I have a love-hate relationship with DC having cities that aren't real. Part of me likes it because it allows the writers more freedom on what's in that city, you know, so they can tell more fantasy-filled stories in a fake city, because you can basically make up whatever part of the city you want. But it does allow you, it doesn't allow you to have that kind of mental tie to, oh, I've been to that street, I've been to that park, I've been to that city, yeah, like you can with other companies. But when it comes to new powers and stuff, I don't like the fact that they keep making, like Superman a couple years ago just got the new power of a super flare where he can expel all of his solar energy into a giant, basically a nuclear bomb of solar flare, which I think is freaking stupid. But
yeah, I just think, I mean, you told me before, which I had no idea, the only reason why Superman flies is because they couldn't have the TV version leap over a single building in a single bound and make it look good.
Yeah, it was too costly to have him jump over stuff and animate it, so they made him fly.
Yeah, and so then the comic book kind of gravitated towards that, which is great, you know what I mean? But at some point, it's like, okay, you got to put a lid on how much power Superman has.
Well, you know why this? Do you know why we have Kryptonite?
No.
So Kryptonite was created for the radio show, and it was created because the actor who was voicing Superman Clark Kent on the radio show got sick and needed a break. So they had Kryptonite make him sick. So when he was out for that couple of weeks, he sounded different because Kryptonite was making him sick.
That's awesome.
He was dying from it. And then that became incorporated into the comics, where Kryptonite could then depower or kill Superman depending on which version of your reading. But here's my thing about Superman, and it's like everybody harks on Superman for, yeah, oh, you can beat him with a little green rock. Yeah, okay, I get it. It's ridiculous and silly, but if you're reading a Superman story and it comes out ridiculous and silly because the catalyst to knocking him out is a little green rock, you're reading a story by a bad writer. Like,
right,
the Superman stories that are good have nothing to do with his strength, have nothing to do with his powers. They're all about him, the hopefulness he instills upon others, and him getting out of situations that don't involve him just punching things.
But that's exactly what I hate about Superman. That's exactly what I hate about him, is this whole Boy Scout thing and the hope that he exudes. Hope of what? Hope of some alien guy that can fly across the world and bend time and have heat vision and super strength?
No, not
that
at all.
That he's going to give you hope to for what?
No,
I like the one that you sent me a strip one time of him helping somebody off the ledge.
Yeah.
And that was kind of cool, but at the same time... About. Yeah, how many times are you going to do that story?
Well, it's not the hope you get in him. It's the hope he has in humanity. That is what makes him a good character. It's not the stories where it's like, oh.
But fuck him. What hope does he have to have in humanity? Why do I have to care about his hope in my fucking humanity?
Well, it's not in your humanity. It's in humanity in the books. But it's the fact that he fights for you. He fights for humankind, and he's not a human. And he fights for the humanity and... the hope that humans will do the right thing.
It just sounds like Ghostbusters 2 and everybody singing and then Statue of Liberty coming to life. That's what it sounds like. And that's what drives me nuts about Superman. Is I just want him to be a badass and not freaking care so much about what other people think about him and just do what he has to do to get things done. And sometimes I just want him to be that way.
He doesn't care what people think about him. That's not what he's about. He doesn't care if you like him or don't like him. I think what you need to do is I need to send you some stories to read, and you need to read some of the good Superman stories that deal with this kind of stuff, that you can understand what I'm talking about. Because I think I'm not explaining it well enough for you to grasp what I'm trying to say on this, because Superman, he gets such a bad rap because he's the Boy Scout, but if people would just...
Well, I don't think it's just Superman as a character so much as the way DC is forced their writers to publish him and to write about him. You know what I mean? They have a vision and they're like, this is what Superman stands for. This is who he is. You cannot put any dents in these things. And that's what drives me nuts. He's not a flawed character so much because he's not as flawed as he should be to me, right? I mean, that guy went through the ringer. You know what I mean? His whole planet got destroyed. He was raised by people that weren't even of his own race. You know, and then he's got the weight of the world assuming that he should be the one that saves them every single time. How come that fucker don't have a drug problem by now? A drinking problem, at least, or something that makes him a little bit, because as much as he's an alien, he is human to the core, because that is how he was raised. And he has feelings like everybody, and he has, you know, all the same basic emotional capabilities as any other human being. Yet he has no issues.
Well, I wouldn't say he has no issues. I would not say that at all.
Issues always come from him, his arrogance, and or just the fact that he's so powerful, everybody got to step on toes. I think this is why I like the fact that Batman and BVS hated him so much. Because I kind of like feel the same way. It's like, fuck you, dude. Who are you to pass judgment on people and tell Batman to stop being Batman? Because why? Because you think you can do it better or you're better for humanity? No.
No, you're not. He wasn't telling Batman to stop being Batman because of Batman. He was telling Batman to stop doing
this. That's exactly what he said. Next time the bat signal goes up, ignore it. You're done. The bat is dead. That's exactly what he said.
Because he was branding people and hurting people, not because he was being Batman. It's because of how he was doing it. It wasn't because he was fighting justice.
But what is it? Why does his demeanor and his opinion of how the Batman was doing things is more important than Bruce Wayne's?
Well, what makes Batman more important to pass judgment upon Superman, a person who's done no wrong, a person who has done nothing but give his abilities and his time to protecting the Earth from the moment he came out, to go and want to kill him and say, if there's a 1% chance we have to take him out, what kind of bullshit is that? Right?
That's a valid argument.
No, that makes but less
I'm
sense.
I'm arguing about Superman.
But that makes less sense than Superman doing and telling Batman to calm it the fuck down.
But the point is, to me, though, is I feel like every Superman story I read is that's the common theme with him, is that his opinion and the way he thinks things are should be simply because if he wants to, he can force you to do it physically.
I honestly, Kendrick, man, you're not reading. How many Superman stories have you actually read?
Not a lot.
Yeah.
Nothing like you.
You're like, what you're describing is not Superman at all. Like, if you have watched the Justice League cartoon Superman there with Tim Daly do voicing him, or if you've watched, you know, the old...
Yeah, I've watched all the Justice League cartoons. Yeah, I love those.
He's nothing like that in that cartoon at all. At all. He's not a bully. He doesn't force his will upon anybody. He's the voice of reason and the voice of humanity of telling people to calm down. Like, that's not at all what he does. Now, what you're describing in Superman, that's probably like three bad stories about Superman. I'm not saying there's been a lot of bad stories about Superman. A lot. And those people who write the bad stories, you know, they don't understand Superman. It's like, why the hell would you let someone like Zack Snyder direct a Superman movie when he openly doesn't like Superman? And more importantly, right.
That'd be like having me direct a movie about Superman.
No. More importantly, right now, why are you letting Frank Miller write Superman Year One when he openly hates Superman? And only reason why he made The Dark Knight Returns the way he did and put Superman in there was so he could have Batman punch him in the face. Like,
such a great scene, though.
I don't care if it's a great scene. Stop giving characters to people who hate the characters.
Right.
You want to know what people don't appreciate Man of Steel and Batman v Superman? Because you have people writing it and people directing it who don't like the character. So they don't want you to like him. They want you to like Batman. So it's a skewed system.
I mean, I don't want you to get the wrong idea, dude. I want to like Superman as I. It's the same thing though to me with like Captain. I just don't like people that are so arrogant in their way that they deal with other people that no matter what someone says, they're always right. And that drives me nuts. It drives me nuts in life. You know, you listen to what people have to say and then try to think of it. And the thing is all this, you're right. I haven't read enough stories or good ones with the way Superman is, but all the stories I have read tend to seem like his opinion is the only one that matters at the end of the day. And it's like everybody's looking to him for his opinion because I don't think they care about, I don't know, man. It's just such a weird... He's a weird character that I feel like has been written about so many times that I don't know that anybody really knows exactly who he is.
Well, take, for example, Kingdom Come. You read that one, right?
Yeah. That was a great one. Okay. And he was fine in that. The only thing I didn't like in that was his ponytail. Other than that, he was a great character in that one.
Yeah. That's Superman. Okay. That's how Superman is.
And I like, but he was, and what I liked about it was that he was just taking care of the business. You know what I mean? And then he was calling out when Wonder Woman went over the edge.
Yeah. You would probably.
But I always liked the concept in Justice League with Batman liking Wonder Woman, not Superman.
In the cartoon.
I thought that was better. It just made more sense to me. I mean, I get that at some point Lois Lane's going to die because of old age.
Right.
But they never show it at that point, right? You just don't. She's just all of a sudden gone. There's no mention of her in any way. And then all of a sudden, you know, and what? Because she's this amazing Amazon and she can handle Superman, so that's a natural thing. I don't think it is, because, you know, I don't think Superman actually likes to fight. I don't think he actually likes the technician part of it.
No, he doesn't.
I think he would be happy that if he could sit on his farm and do his thing and everybody just got along, I think he would be a very happy person at that point. You know, I think Batman likes to fight, and I think him and Wonder Woman fighting together make a lot more sense to me. And it just felt more organic for them to be an item.
Yeah, the Wonder Woman Superman, or the Wonder Woman Batman dynamic was done really well. I mean, there are aspects you could argue that would make Superman and Wonder Woman a better couple altogether. My problem with the Superman Wonder Woman dynamic is, while I see the lure of putting those two together because of who they are, what they represent, and their power set, it ignores... They handled it well in Kingdom Come, right? Because it was after Lois had died. But it takes away the whole thing about Lois Lane.
Did they mention that she died?
Yeah.
Because I was looking for that. I didn't see that. Are you sure?
Part of the reason why he was in the fortress doing what he was doing was because of what the new breed of superheroes were doing, and Lois had passed.
Did she die with one of the bombs went off in Kansas?
I believe so, yeah.
Oh, I don't think I got that, because I was looking. I was like, how come there's no mention of Lois Lane? But yeah. maybe it was near the beginning and I just missed it.
Yeah, it's in the first book.
Yeah.
But yeah, so.
I'm going to reread that. That was such a great story.
It's so good. It's so good.
Send me some stuff on Superman. I'll read it. You know, I mean, you read the stuff with the Kraven's The Last Hunt on Spider-Man, because I was telling you how great of a story it was.
And it was.
And then we're going to go in. Yeah. And we're going to do some other stuff, too. And I read Kingdom Come, and you know, hands down, that was one of the best DC stories I've read in a long time.
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
So I will go back and you send me the stuff, and I'll read some more Superman stuff, and I'll give you another opinion. But it's going to be hard, because I've had this opinion of Superman since I was a teenager. And it's just... I just don't really like the whole Boy Scout thing. I just don't. I think it's fake.
Yeah.
And that's my point. I feel it's fake. And I really want him to have some more humanity in him as a person, like a drinking problem, or, you know what
right,
I mean?
I know what you mean. Now, the one I'll send to you right now off the bat, and I'll send it to you too. If you want to see a flawed Superman and a Superman that I think you'll probably love a lot, you need to read the Injustice comics.
What, Gods Among Us? Yeah, but that's all from the video game.
Don't let that deter you. Seriously.
No, I know they're supposed to be amazing.
They are.
But they're not in the. Yeah, they're supposed to be amazing, and I would love to read them. And I'll totally read them. But those are a separate offshoot. They're not even part of the main. They're not part of the DC universe as much as.
Yeah, but nothing is anymore. I mean,
your normal
nothing's
things.
Part of the DC universe. It's just like nothing's part of the Marvel universe, because they've rebooted everything 19 times in the last 20 years. So they're all just stories.
Yeah.
You know? You can't argue that even Crisis Infinite Earths is barely in the DC universe anymore. It's kind of coming back with Rebirth, but they keep taking things in and out of continuity on all sides of these companies. And so it's like, you just have to read the stories and enjoy the stories for what they are versus worrying about them being in continuity. Because, I mean, Elektra died in the 70s and she's still around somehow, you know.
It was the 80s.
It was the 80s.
But yeah.
Whatever. She died, and then they brought her back against Frank Miller's will. And, you know, people, the stories that happened, everybody's, you know, classic about, no longer happened. Like, Kraven's been back since Kraven's Last Hunt, and he died at that. In that, you know,
has he been back?
Yeah, he's been back.
Have they had him in like modern times though?
I'm pretty sure they have.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that's true. But so, what can DC do better?
So DC, in my opinion, one of the things that's hard for people to get into DC is there's such, and they've tried, right? They've tried consolidating their timeline. They've tried rebooting things. They've tried all this stuff, and I don't have the answer for it, but. They need to have a consistency in what they're telling, right? Because they haven't had as many reboots as other companies have, or as many restarts they have. I mean, they had Crisis on Infinite Earths, which kind of restarted everything back in 87. They have the New 52, which restarted everything in 2011. They had Rebirth in 2014. And Rebirth is kind of tying New 52 into the classic stuff. And this isn't just my...
Rebirth 2014?
Yeah, Rebirth.
No, that was like 2016, I thought.
Well, they're on maybe 2015, because they're on issue like 28 of Rebirth right now.
Yeah, but they're doing double issues, like Batman does double a month. They're doing bi-weekly on Batman right now.
Well, let's look it up. DC Rebirth number 1 came out in May 25th, 2016.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it was like 2014. That's like a lifetime ago to me.
So to be fair, I was... clearly only judging that based on the number of issues I saw on Batman today, so.
yeah, well, they're doing bi-weekly, okay. So that's, yeah.
But if DC could keep things consistent and stop changing their stories and changing how things happen, like, I really don't like that in post New 52, we don't have we don't really have Kyle Reiner anymore as Green Lantern. We don't really have Wally West as Flash. You know, they spent 20 plus years building up Wally West as Flash, Kyle Reiner as Green Lantern, and these other secondary characters that have been elevated to their status, and then now they're just gone. Like, if, even in the Batman mythos right now, there's Dick Grayson Robin, who is now Nightwing, even in the current storylines. But what about Tim Drake?
He's been Nightwing a long time now, though.
But Tim Drake was, as far as I know right now, Tim Drake was never a Robin. He's always been Red Robin in the current storylines. But Tim Drake was the first Robin to have his own comic book series and had a comic book series last 100, almost 200 issues. And they just wrote that off.
You know what I'm getting sick of is them shoving Damian down our throat.
Yeah, they're pushing Damian hard. Now, I like Damian.
I
like him.
I don't. He's such an asshole, man. It's just hard to. He's just such an arrogant little brat. It's hard to get behind him in any kind of storyline. It's just like I just want somebody to punch him in the face and, and call it good every time I read anything with him. Yeah. It's like, oh my god, dude, shut up.
Yeah, the problem I have with Damian is they're pushing him so hard right now, and they push him so hard for the last couple of years, and they've neglected all the other Robins. And like, you know, you've got Jason Todd back as the Red Hood, and I guess in continuity he was still a Robin that got killed. Quote unquote.
He should be dead. Whatever. He should be dead.
But
that one, I like the Red Hood character, but Jason Todd should be dead because the fans voted him dead.
Did they?
Yes, they did, dude. Let's not like, no, they did.
Well, do you know what happened with that?
Yeah, they did. I collected the comic book when they did it. I called in to have him die.
Yeah, there was a couple of guys who had auto dialers set up to call in to have him die over and over again, and the margin of him living and dying was very, very small.
Yeah, but there's guys that had auto dialers for him to live too.
I've never heard that.
And so it's safe to say if you have one out of a few, it was probably 80,000 or 90,000 people or whatever it was doing one way, you probably have a few doing the other way. You know, but Jason Todd wasn't really liked anyways. If you read some of the books and you read the commentary in the back, you'll see that a lot of people didn't really like that dude as a Robin. And probably because he's not Dick Grayson.
No.
And I think, isn't he the next one after Dick Grayson? Am I right in saying that?
You're right in saying that, but that's not why they didn't like him. They didn't like him because he wasn't Dick Grayson. They didn't like him because he was too much like Dick Grayson. It was basically they had a new Robin with the new name, but he had almost the exact same backstory as Dick Grayson, and everything about him was the same as Dick Grayson. So they didn't give you a new character.
But that's saying the same thing, right? He's not Dick Grayson. It's basically saying the same thing, right? You replace Dick Grayson with Dick Grayson.
Right.
Okay. Exactly. But he's not Dick Grayson, so people didn't like him because it's like, why replace Dick Grayson with somebody else if it's going to be the same person? Yeah. And I get it. But people didn't really like him. You know, and I just felt like, you know, whether they use auto dialers or not, I don't really care because you opened it up the forum for fan voting that way and it happened and he should be dead.
Yeah, I don't
and
care.
And I think bringing him back as the Red Hood. I mean, because the Red Hood's a cool character. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it could be anybody underneath the Red Hood to make him the way he is.
Yeah, I know.
It doesn't have to be Jason Todd.
I get what you're saying, but without him coming back, we wouldn't have, like, if you haven't read it or haven't seen the movie yet, Under the Red Hood is by far one of the best Batman stories in the last, like, 20 years. It is so good.
That movie was amazing.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? I'm going to change my mind because that movie, the way it happened and the fact that he goes through all of that and comes back as a Red Hood was pretty freaking badass. Exactly.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying I'm okay with him coming back because his comeback story is so great. And if you haven't read...
But he like full on blew up in a building, yeah. Man. You're not surviving that one.
But if you ever read a book called from New 52 called Red Hood and Arsenal,
is that a good one?
It's fun. I mean, it's not the best title from New 52, but it's a good read. I read the first two volumes of it. It's because basically it's Red Hood, Arsenal, and Starfire, and their dynamic between the three of them is very good. It's very like. It's really like a college roadshow or road trip type of comic book where they're kind of like on these missions and stuff, and they're very immature but adults, you know. It's fun because Arsenal's an asshole, you know, straight up.
Right. I think what I don't like about DC is that people are just background more, than being more intricate. Right. I mean, you don't have very many Steve Trevors. You know,
right. You have,
and it's just like everybody's like this almost God type being, and they're just, you know, everything else is superfluous. And I don't, and it's kind of weird in their writing. And that's just a critique. That's not like, obviously I still love all the stuff they're done. I mean, there's some characters, dude, that I just downright don't like. I just think they're corny, like the Green Lantern. I know people love the Green Lantern, and I'm sure somebody's going to hear this and think I'm just an idiot, but I'm sorry. I just think the whole Will Ring of Power thing and the constructs that he comes up with, I just think it's just, I just don't like it. I try to like it, you know what I mean? But I'd much rather read Dr. Fate.
The problem for me with Green Lantern, like I like Kyle Reiner as Green Lantern for various reasons I grew up with him, but my problem with Green Lantern, especially with the Green Lantern Corps, is it's so damn confusing. And there's just so many, there's so many core members, there's so many cores, there's so much of this. I mean, when New 52 happened, I tried to read all the Lantern books to kind of get caught up on it because I wanted to go through it. But it ended up, I was like, I don't know who's who. There's so many names, there's so many characters, I can't follow all this, and I give up on it.
Yeah, it's a universe unto itself.
It really is.
So it's kind of weird.
Although,
the Green Lantern I do like is the military, the black guy. I can't remember his name. He, to me, is the coolest Green Lantern. If I'm going to like a Green Lantern, he's the only one that I'm going to read.
Yeah.
Other than that, I like Hal Jordan.
I don't like Hal Jordan.
Yeah, he's just, I don't know, man. He's just boring, and it's just like, I don't really care. He was created at a time when test pilots were literal superheroes to the kids of America. Yeah. I can't relate at all, and I just don't like, I don't know. But it really comes down to the power ring. It's just, I just think it's stupid.
Well, that's why I can relate to Kyle Rayner was an artist, so I liked him because his constructs were creative and interesting. But Green Lantern, I tried to get into it. It's hard to get into. I mean, even if you want to go read, if you read Blackest Night and Brightest Day, two of some of the best maxi series that have come out in the last, 10, 15 years, probably from DC at least.
Yeah.
It's all about the Green Lantern Corps, but there's, the whole DCU is in it, and it's a great read. But getting after those and trying to read all the different Green Lantern books, which have been super popular because they're publishing a lot of them each month, I just couldn't get into it.
Yeah.
Because there's so much. I couldn't.
The Green Lantern, the Green Lanterns. They're doing Lantern Corps.
There was Red Lanterns for a while. There's been the Larfleeze book. Yeah. It's like, there's just so many of them. It's hard to keep up with.
They just introduced a new Lantern, Phantom Lantern.
Yeah, I know. It's like, I don't.
Yeah, it's too much. And I just never really cared for it.
But you're right. It's a universe within a universe. Like, it's the Green Lanterns exist in the DCU, but they're kind of like their own entire thing.
Yeah. It's DC has some weird continuity. I kind of think they have so many characters. I don't think there's anything wrong by canceling some books, you know what I mean? And having some core books that do certain things to move your storyline forward for a while. Like Batman has way too many books.
Yeah, he does.
I'm sorry. Batman, Detective Comics, those are the only two that should have.
Yeah.
And only because of how long they've been around. Because really, I would just have Detective Comics and call it good, you know? But Batman's been around so long, you got to have him. But All-Star Batman, get out of here. I mean, come on. I dropped that one out of my box. I told Russ. I was like, dude, I can't. It's too many.
Yeah, Batman does not need 7 books a month or however many he has. I mean, in the New 52, he had like 7 books coming out every month. That's just too many. Like, what I think they should do, what I've always liked is, have your main characters, right? Your Superman, your Batman, your Wonder Woman, whatever. Pick your main 5 if you want to go that far. Give them their own books. Keep around Action Comics, keep around Detective Comics, because those are staples and they should be there no matter what, because you can tell good stories there. But have other books like, Adventure Comics or other titled comics that you can tell multiple types of stories in, like they used to tell. And you could tell, you could do a full 22-page story of one character or one story in a book, or you could break it up and say, here's 2 stories. One, one Booster Gold and Blue Beetle, one of them is going to be Dr. Fate, and they have these 2 stories. You could read them through multiple issues versus having 50 or 60 books each month telling all these stories. I mean, as much as I love a lot of these characters, they don't need their own book,
Yeah. Well, I think a character that they've never really got behind is Dr. Fate. He's had multiple series and they always end him quick. He's never had, I kind of feel like he needs like a really, either like, he needs like a Garth Ennis, to come on and really, really, really give him a story that is ridiculous that people can get behind and be like, wow. Because I think he might be my favorite DC character.
Really,
Fate? Him and, he might be. He's up there, that's for sure. you know, with Batman and stuff, because he's just, you read him, it's just weird and fun, and, you know, the helmet is, you know, is possessive, and it's just a cool, I think it's everything that Doctor Strange wants to be.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's a different kind of story. It's a different kind of superhero. And I just don't think anybody's ever done him right.
Well, he's not even really a superhero. He's more of this construct. This not construct, it's not the word, but, you know, he's more of this idea.
Well, the Dr. Fate, yeah, he's an idea, but it's somebody. So I read the books, the Piers Anthy, the Incarnations of Immortality. You ever read those?
I have not, no.
So those are really good books. If you ever get a chance, you should check them out. And they're written in the 80s. And the whole concept is, like, death is an office ran by a human. And the way that you become death is that you kill death. And so in the book On a Pale Horse by Piers Anthy, go check it out on Amazon or wherever books are sold. But Zane is going to commit suicide. And as he's committing suicide, death comes walking through the mirror of his apartment. And for some reason, he's able to move the gun, and he shoots death in the head. And there's a whole reason why this happens and why it worked.
Right.
And that we're not going to get into. And anyways, so as death dies on the floor of Zane's apartment, Fate walks through the mirror as well. And it's a lady. And she grabs Death's robe and all this stuff and says, this is what's going on. This is what you have to do. And the point is, Death is a construct, like you just said. But it's a human that creates the office and runs the office of Death to make sure that these things are happening in the universe, and specifically on Earth, right? And then there's all these other ones. There's Mars, and there's the Father Time, and there's For the Love of Evil, and what's about Satan, and Being a Green Mother, about Gaia, and these are all offices that are held by humans. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And with now the office is immortal, and as long as you're in the office, you're immortal. But as you die, if you get killed or you quit, then somebody takes over, right? And then they stay in that age, and they move forward. And that's what Dr. Fate to me is like. Right? Because I think once you put the helmet on, you become Dr. Fate, and it's the construct of Dr. Fate, but the person is still just the person. And I think that's what I liked. I liked that aspect of it. I liked that weirdness of it. And I think I like the fact that you could relate to whoever is under the helmet and be like, oh, how would you react if all of a sudden you had all these powers and you were this person that had these things that you could do that you couldn't do before, and you had all these responsibilities of keeping the unnatural realm from the natural realm.
Well, and a big part of Dr. Fate too is you're not always in control of the helm, you know.
That's right. You're not. Sometimes you're just there, and you're a passenger in the car. That's right. It. Yeah, and I like that. And I just think that DC has never really got behind the character. Not in a way that they should, because he's a cool looking character. He's got bright colors. The helmet can be done right. It's kind of, you know, and I just think I think it comes down to the writer more than the artist at this point,
yeah.
You know, because I think the writing needs to be on point. And I don't know, man. Like I said, like a Garth Ennis, something like that,
yeah.
Or maybe a Jason Aaron. That's really big. Or, you know what would be cool is be a Brian K. Vaughan, come back to DC and do it as a Vertigo title. Oh my God.
Now let me do it. I'll do a good job.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's, and well,
let's you and I do it together.
Hell yeah. So Dr. Fate, they've used him. I mean, they use him all the time, but they always use him as a background character, or as, you know,
they do. And they've tried to give him his own series multiple times. And the last one, it was, I want to say it was a, they try to make him, I think it was an Iranian kid, teenager. And it was interesting. And I liked it. And then they canned it. And I was like, oh. Because that's the thing with Dr. Fate. You could create any character underneath the helmet that you want.
Right.
He doesn't have to be some white guy or some black guy just to be black. You know what I mean? Or to be white.
Anybody.
It can be anybody. It can be anything. Right? It can be an alien. It could be Superman for all you know.
Right. It could
you know, anything. Can you imagine Superman put on the helm? That'd be crazy. Have
the helm of Horus. It's the helm of Horus, whatever it is, you know, controlling Superman. That'd be very, very interesting.
That'd be nuts. Yeah. But I just think that he is everything that Doctor Strange wants to be, but Marvel did a better job with Doctor Strange. And that's a problem.
I'll take your word for that, because the only Doctor Strange I've honestly ever had any kind of interaction with is the movie, and a couple him appearing in other issues that I've read. I've never actually read a Doctor Strange book.
He had a long ass run from the 60s all the way into the 80s. He's had multiple movies. He's had a TV made movie. He's had a cartoon movie. He's had the animated movie that was really good. And then the movie now. Guaranteed, if you pull 10 people to the side and they don't know comics, they know who Doctor Strange is. They don't know who Dr. Fate is.
I agree completely. I mean,
so they've done a much better job of getting his name out there and getting him what he is today. But he's everything that he wants to be, Dr. Fate. And I'm saying that ideologically, not right. Getting who Dr. Fate right. is. I'm just saying that Marvel was like, we want a Dr. Fate, and they created Dr. Strange, and there you go. And so I would love to see them do something with him. And that's one of my knocks. They have so many characters. Yeah. It's like, how do you do it?
A fun little fact about Dr. Strange real quick. Do you know his first appearance, he was Asian?
Makes sense.
And then the second issue, they said they decided they couldn't have an Asian main character, so they made him white.
That's stupid.
Because if you, and they'll argue the fact that's not true, but if you look at Steve Ditko's first drawings in the first issue, he is clearly an Asian man.
Stereotypes and all?
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. That's dumb.
Yeah. So, I mean, getting back to DC, because we're going on, we go on tangents, and that's fine. You know, there's a lot of things.
Well, it was a Dr. Fate tangent. Yeah, that's all.
Well, I mean, earlier we spent like 20 minutes talking about the Comics Code Authority, so.
Well, it happens.
But, you know, DC, if I had to pick one thing that I wish DC wouldn't do, it would be putting so much behind Batman and nothing behind the other great characters they have. And like, it kind of falls into line what you just said. They put so much behind Batman because Batman sells, people love Batman and whatever, but eventually people are going to get tired of Batman, and they're going to have all their cards in one basket of Batman, and they're going to have to then spend all that re-educating people on who all of these other characters are that have been lost to the whims of Batman over the years, you know?
Right. And right. So you think they put too many eggs with Batman?
Oh, they put
too many eggs in the basket.
Way too many. Way too many. And I get it. People love Batman. You want to give them what they like, but people love things more when it's not everything they can get. You know, people will seek out to get it more if they have to. If it's Batman in your face all the time, people are less likely to go for it, you know? I mean, I love them. I know you don't care to buy them because you don't want to, you know, increase your collectibleness, but the action figures they put out, if you look at the DC Multiverse figures they put out every couple times a year, there's always like four or five different Batman toys in it.
Right.
And like there'll be one Wonder Woman or one Superman or one whatever character, and then there'll be Batman, armored Batman, classic Batman, Batman with the giant dildo, you know, whatever. It's like, come on. You don't need five.
Why did you have to go there?
I don't know. It came out. But, you know, they'll have Batman with white gloves, Batman with purple gloves, and then they'll have here's Superman, you know, or here's Green Lantern. And it's like, we don't need six Batman toys in every one run. I mean, in the Batman and Superman multiverse characters they had, there was an Aquaman for some stupid reason. There was a Wonder Woman, one Superman, and three or four Batmans. It's like, it's Batman v Superman. You have one Superman toy and four different Batmans. It's like,
well, they know it sells, man. They ride that pony until it dies.
But do they sell? Because you can go to Walmart and you can still see those on the shelf, and you can see them going in the clearance aisle because nobody's buying all of them because they have so many of them. People,
right?
You won't see the Aquaman or the Wonder Woman or the Superman because those ones.
But here's the deal, dude. When you're thinking the sales from DC side, it's not how many John Horsley buys. It's how many does Walmart buy. And if Walmart's going to go, we need 10 million Batmans, then DC's like, all right, we're going to acquiesce with 10 million different versions of Batman.
No, I know.
But we only want to buy, you know, 500 Supermans. All right, well, then we're just going to make this one. Because it's not what we buy. It's the purchasing power of the stores that stock it. And if they over-purchase it and they put it in the clearance bin, then, you know, that's on them. Because DC.
To be fair, the way action figures work is you can't order 1,000 Batmans, 5 Wonder Woman's, 6 Supermans. That's not how it works. You order a case, and that case has an assortment. And in that assortment is made by the toy company and by Warner Bros. In DC to say, okay, one case will get you this many Batmans, this many Supermans, this many Wonder Womans. You don't order them individually.
So Walmart can't say, I want, you don't think Walmart can go to Mattel or whoever it is and say, I want this many? I bet they can't.
I 100% guarantee you they can't.
No way.
Because, no.
Walmart is writing them like a check for like almost $10 million. And you're going to tell me they're going to be like, no. You have to do it the way we sell the comic book stores and to freaking GameStop? No way, man. Walmart dictates what they can get. I promise you,
Mattel dictates how they get sold.
We gotta investigate this. This is a great question because I would be shocked if Walmart, who is probably the biggest purchasers of toys in the U.S. right now, cannot dictate what toys they're allowed to get when they buy it from a distributor.
The thing. They can dictate if
100%
if the distributor, Mattel or whatever, sells that toy individually to them. Like if you like the bigger toys, like the big figs, right? You could buy those ones individually through the distributor. Could buy a case of just Batman, then they'll sell them that way. But when it comes to like the Marvel Legends or the DC Multiverse toys, you can't do that. It's by case and by case only. I've actually talked to people at Walmart asking, hey, do you guys order these individually? Can you order me just this character? And they tell you, no, we have to order them by the case, and we get whatever comes in the case, we put it on the shelf. They have no quarrels or no foot in the game of picking which toys there are.
But the individual stores don't buy it from the distributor. They have a buyer that does that. And then the stores call their buyer and say, I want this, this, and this. And then they send them from their own warehouse to them. They don't buy it directly from the store for the store.
Look, I'll look.
That's not how we'll that
look
works.
It up, but I guarantee you, Walmart cannot say, send me 16 Batman, send me 15 Batman that are the armored Batman, send me one Superman, send me one Wonder Woman. That's not how it works. It's send me 25 cases.
I think we got to write down. Yeah, right. I think we got to write down exactly what we're asking, right? Because I might not understand what you're saying right now. Because to me, a toy is a toy. And I don't know what you're saying when you're saying legends or whatever.
Just action figures.
Like a big, right. Individually wrapped action figures or action figures like in a set. So I don't know what you're saying.
So here, I'll try to explain it for you here. I've been on the retail side. I've been on the ordering side. I've talked with places like Toys R Us and Walmart about how they order stuff as well. I've did that when I was trying to get exclusives before, to try and sell on eBay and make money. So I know how they order them.
Sure.
When you buy toys that are individually wrapped, like when you go and you buy an action figure, that's Batman or Spider-Man or whatever. If you're the retail side,
right,
you cannot say, I want 4 of these. You have to say, I want a case of these. You buy them by the case, which a case has 10, 15, 20, 25, whatever action figures in it. You buy them for the case price. You cannot order them individually. In that case is an assortment of what you get. Each case assortment is pretty much always the same. So if there's 10 in a case,
so you're get saying, 7 Batmans, let me get this right,
3 Wonder Womans, 1 Superman. That's your case of 10. So every case gives you that.
Okay, so what you're saying is like, and let's get straight. Mattel's not going to sell directly to Walmart, right? They go through a distributor, but that's irrelevant. So, but what you're saying though is Mattel's going to go. Walmart's going to call Mattel and say, "Hey, we want to sell." Or Mattel calls Walmart saying, "Hey, we got this new action figure line of DC Comics, and in it we have Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman and the Flash." And Walmart says, "Great, we want to buy some." Cool. What do you want to order? And you're saying that Mattel is going to go, you can buy them by the box or the case or whatever you want to say. And in each case, we're just going to throw whatever we want in there. And that's what you get.
Not exactly.
And that Walmart can't say, I only want like 10 million Batman and 5 million Supermans and 3 million Wonder Womans. And I want like 500,000 Flashes.
So
they can't do that.
No, they cannot do that. What they don't say, it's a random assortment. They say you order a case. In that case, you get these figures. That case has these figures. You have this figure who's the chase figure, one per case, one per 10 cases. So every 10 cases you order, you get one of these figures. Every one case, you get one of these, two of these, six of these.
Yeah, throw the chase figure out because I get that. That's the collectible that everybody's looking for.
And because,
right? That's what you're saying.
But because of that chase figure, because of whatever the assortment they have in that case, that's what you have to order. Walmart, Toys R Us, Target has to order them by the case. So they only get that allotment. And the reason why they don't allow you to do individual figures is because you have collectors and people who seek those out who know that when they come out, okay, in the new set, there's going to be one Wonder Woman with a gold shield per store, so, or per case. So I need to get there, right, and get that one quick. Right. Otherwise, you know, they can't just order that one figure, and they can't just order more Batmans. And that's how they get you to buy more cases, because if you want to have five Wonder Womans or five Supermans to sell, and they're only one per case or two per cases, you've got to buy 5 or 10 cases, and then you have all those Batmans, and you'll sell those other ones, and you'll discount the Batmans out. That's how they work. They don't allow you to order them directly. Now,
that's just, yeah, I think we need to investigate it, though, because I just think somebody with the purchasing power at Walmart can be like, no, you know, we'll take the Chase ones based on whatever, but I want this many Batmans, and I want this many Wonder Womans, and I want this many
Supermans. But you're ignoring the fact that it's not Walmart talking to Mattel. Like you said, it's Walmart talking to a distributor, and the distributor is bound by the rules of Mattel. Mattel says you can only sell them as a case because you're a distributor. If you're a retailer, you can open them.
That's right. But Walmart can pick up the phone and say, hey, Mattel, tell your distributor we want this many.
Right.
And then Mattel is going to go, oh, well, how much are you buying? Well, we want to spend $10 million on something. And Mattel's going to go, yeah, that's a good amount of money. We're going to make this happen. I'm just curious. I'm not saying that you're wrong, dude. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? I want to make that clear. I'm not saying that you're wrong.
I'm not saying you're wrong, but I don't agree with you.
You're probably right. Yeah, you said, well, no, I don't have any ground to speak of. You said you did the research. You said you've talked to these people. Then I have no reason not to believe you. And that's not what I'm saying. I just find it so, it's just hard to believe. That you get what I'm saying? It's not that I don't believe you. It's just that it's hard to believe because it's like, because money always talks, you know? And when you're the biggest toy purchaser, and that's something we should look up to, who is actually the biggest toy purchaser in America? And I'm not talking about an individual, but from a department store standpoint, you know what I mean? And then figure out from there, because I think Walmart outperforms Toys R Us even when it comes to buying toys. And I could be wrong, but I think they do. And it'd just be interesting to see what the dynamic is there, because I get what you're saying, because they're trying to build this chase mentality of you got to get this. But I would argue that the amount of people that are looking for that Wonder Woman with the golden shield is going to be a very minute percentage compared to the amount of people that are actually going to buy the doll just to buy the doll for their kids.
Right. And I'll agree with you on that.
So I don't think Walmart's going to care if they're like, I think I can sell 10 million of those Batmans because I got 10 million freaking kids coming in, and I had Batman 2 years ago and it sold out, or you know what I mean? Or we made all of our money back and then some because we had so many of them. We want to do that again. Because they don't look at it from the collector's point of view. They look at it on what's my return on investment.
I know.
What's my ROI?
I totally get what you're saying. It's hard to believe it, but I guarantee you that in the industry, buying toys, you buy them by the case for your store to sell them out of your case. You can't buy them. They don't sell them. They don't do individual
cases. But I wonder if
Now, I'm not saying there's never been an instance where they say, okay, we're going to have this case of toys, but you can also buy the common one by itself in a case of 10 or whatever. Because they've done that before. But in general, right, for each toy set that comes out, it's by the case. It's an allotment per case, and everybody gets the same allotment per case they buy, or per box they buy, or per case they buy. It's not going to be any different from buying if Toys R Us is buying it, if Walmart's buying it, or if, you know, Mom and Pa's comic shop is buying it. It's going to be all the same thing. Now, Walmart and Toys R Us may get a steep – is not made. They're going to get a steeper discount than, say, like Mill Geek Comics would if they bought the same thing, because Mill Geek's probably going to get it for 60% versus, you know, Walmart is probably getting it for 40%, you know. But
Mill Geek's gonna buy like four. They're gonna buy like four action figures, and Walmart's gonna buy 4 million.
The difference is their discount they're gonna get, but the contents of that case are gonna be the same.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's. I mean.
I so guess, DC. I guess,
hold on. One more correlation. I guess it's the same thing as saying if you're buying a box of trading cards and you know you can sell X pack versus over X pack, but you're buying a box and all from the same box. You can't say, okay, only send me this card because it's all part of the case that you're going to buy, right?
Yeah, but that's kind of a bad example, though, because they're not – yeah, I don't know, man. that's a different thing because that's one card that's printed – and then it goes into a stack, and then it goes in, and then it goes out, and then you're done. And then it's not the same as creating a toy that's in its own individual packaging. You're talking about a card that's in a pack of 25, and then all 25 are wrapped up. Like I could see if they had sets, right? If they had, say, like they're offering, you know, hey, it's DC's biggest three, and it's Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, right? The big three for, excuse me, the big three for Justice League. Let me take a drink. Right, and they had them in an individual, and they had it in one package. And Walmart came along and said, hey, we only want Batman, or we only want Superman. Then I could see them saying, no, we don't do that because it's all one package. Yeah. And it's one set. That I can see. And that's how cards are done, right? They don't have one card in one pack and then go for it. Because then I could see Walmart saying, hey, I only want the Black Lotus.
Right. Well, I think because...
Right? That's the only card I know of Magic, so...
to go back to toys here, another reason why companies like Mattel and Kenner... Well, I don't think Kenner's a company anymore, but like Mattel and whatever, do it that way.
Hasbro.
Do it that way is because if they allowed places like Walmart to only order the Snake Eyes toy or only order the Batman toy, that's what they would order. And then the rest of the toy that they make wouldn't get ordered and nobody would ever buy it. Nobody would have the opportunity to buy it. So by selling to stores and to retailers by cases of an allotment like that, it forces the store to put these other characters that they don't know yet, or whoever's buying them may not know who the hell they are.
Yeah.
It also stops them from all these retailers having to do research, say, okay, who are these characters? Which one's going to sell? Which one's not going to sell? Say, okay, people like G.I. Joe. People like Batman. Okay, we'll buy the G.I. Joe case, we'll buy the Batman case, we'll put them out, and we'll see what sells. And that feedback goes back to the manufacturers.
That's a valid point.
That's a valid point. They do it that way. Otherwise, stores like Walmart would, like you said, they would just cherry pick and order. They would order Batman and maybe some Supermans, but they wouldn't order the Lois Lane action figure or the, you know, or the offshoot ones they have that come out that people end up loving. They would never buy those ever.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a valid point. It's so a good decent, point. Huh? I didn't think about it that way. Yeah, we are so bad about going off on. It's because, you know, people have to understand, we don't script this. We have a topic, and our topic tonight is. Why is DC
it all
the
leads,
best? And we're going to do that with all
of them. Every one of these we do is going to have these random tangents on random stuff, and it's fine, whatever.
Yeah.
But we should probably wrap this up because we've been talking for like an hour and a half now. So,
have we? I don't even know what we're at. We're 15 minutes.
We're at an hour and a half right now total. I mean, it'll cut it down. It'll let down. But we should probably go into this.
So here's the deal. Yeah. Well, I love DC. You know, I here's what I like about DC now. I'm older. And as I read it, they tend to have more of adult themes. And I don't mean adult themes in sex and drugs and rock and roll or anything like that. I just mean that it's not all teenage drama when you read Spider-Man today, it's all teenage drama. And that's why I can't read it anymore. When you read Batman today, it's serious. It's serious. You know what I mean? I don't know how else to put it. There's not a lot of dumb jokes going on. You know, and the jokes that do go on are more like one-liners, and they're kind of funny. Or,
right.
I don't know how else to put it.
They tell more mature stories. Mature stories. Not that other companies don't tell mature stories, but DC as a line tells more mature stories.
I feel like, okay, here's the deal. I feel like through the 60s and the 80s and stuff, as I've grown, I feel like DC has grown with me. Where I feel like the Marvel that I read in the past is still, they are still putting out the same type of stuff. You know what I mean? And I feel like as I've gotten older and as my worldview has changed, DC has changed along. Like, I don't feel like they left me, they didn't leave me behind, they went with me.
Right.
You know? Where I feel like I passed Marvel. Yeah. And Marvel just kind of sits there.
I also feel like, I agree with you on there, but I also feel like the DC is one of the publishers, and there's a lot of publishers who do this, but there's ones that don't. I don't want to bash anybody on this, but DC seems to have a lot of respect for their fans in so much that they don't do, on the whole, the super exclusive tons and tons and tons of variant covers for every damn issue they put out. And, you know, they've even mentioned it in the thing we went to in Comic-Con that, hey, these variant covers are out of control. You know, it's inflating numbers and it's not real.
No variants for metal.
And that's for a big publisher to say, hey, we're doing this huge thing called Metal. It's going to be our big push for the next year or however long it's going to be. And we're not doing variants for it because, you know, that inflates your sales numbers. Doesn't give you a true readership of what your comic is actually doing. And in my opinion, a lot of times doing just blanket variants to do variants is a disservice to fans because you're telling us, oh, you bought that comic here, buy 10 more of the same thing with different covers, you know?
Yeah, books shouldn't, like Mike Grell said, it creates a false collectible, and we don't want that. So I think books should be dictated by characters that are being introduced, characters that are dying, major turning points in a character's life or in the universe's direction. Things that make an impact should be the books that, that go up and down in value, not just because there's a special cover. And DC has done a pretty good job of creating real collectibles. I'm always shocked because I remember when you and I first started talking about comic books and you were talking about all these DC books that you had. And I went back to eBay and I was like, God dang, man, I never realized how much DC books were worth.
Oh, I know. They're
you know?
Insane.
And growing up, I didn't realize the history of DC. I just realized they had Superman, Batman, but I didn't realize how far back they really went. Yeah. Or what they really meant to the comic book industry.
Yeah.
So it's been an education, you know, over the last few years, going back and reading some stuff, and you know, and I went and got. I mean, I loved Lobo in the 80s just because he was
Lobo's great.
Crazy.
I mean, I wish they'd make a Lobo movie, but I don't know if it would work. It'd have to be set in the 80s to make a good Lobo movie. I think, honestly, because I love Lobo, but I don't think Lobo would work in like modern times unless it was all in space. You know.
The Coen brothers could do a Lobo movie.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Really well. Could you imagine Lobo done in the style of Raising Arizona?
All right, let's tweet.
Right? Did I just
blow
your mind?
Tweet at the Coen brothers and tell them this has to be their next project, okay?
There you go. All right. Well, thanks for listening to us on this crazy, crazy podcast. I think when it comes down to it, we both love DC. We think that you should read more DC, get out there and check them out. Read the history of DC if you get a chance. Look them up on Wikipedia, Google them. They're amazing. Remember, we're on Facebook. Please like and share. We are on YouTube. Please like and share. We're on TuneIn. We're on Stitcher. We're on SoundCloud. We're on
Instagram, we're on Twitter, we're just Google searches, you'll find us. One thing I'm going to do though, one thing we should do in the description of this episode, I'll put some links to some DC stories that I think everybody should read. And you can go there and you can buy them for yourself either on Comixology or Amazon, whatever. And definitely these ones you should, if you only read X number of stories, these are the ones you should read for DC to get an idea of why DC is one of the best, if not the best out there.
That's right. And look out, we are doing a giveaway soon of our Mike Grell DC Comics, Action Comics number 440, the first time Grell has drawn Green Arrow in a story, signed and has a certificate of authenticity. So that's coming soon. Also, we will have a Patreon link soon and a Amazon affiliate soon, right? Or not Amazon affiliate, but Amazon go through our link when you buy books. Okay? We're going to tell you what books to buy. You guys go buy those books through our Amazon link.
And then we'll get a little bit of money out of that somehow. We will also have, we did talk about doing the giveaway for Mike Grell earlier. We just haven't got it set up yet. And we haven't forgot about it. We will do the giveaway for A-Box as well, for the Aliens hat and the Aliens tumbler. Those will be coming in the future once we figure out the logistics of making sure this happens and happens appropriately. And, you know, nobody has a hard time.
That's right. All right. That is us for today. We'll see you guys later. Peace.